You're listening to the Bag of Pucks podcast, part of the National Podcast Network.
Guys, Ovechkin has passed Gretzky. The most important stat ever is passed Gretzky in empty net goals.
Oh, empty net goals.
No, he has not passed him in all time, though, but he has passed Gretzky in empty net goals. Ovechkin has scored, I think it was number 57. His number 57th empty net goal, which is kind of interesting because I don't feel like Ovechkin's the type of guy that you put on the ice when the other team is pushing for a goal.
Would you not want your most lethal goal scorer out there to finish off a game?
Yeah, but no, but like I'm thinking like in terms of like there's good chance, you know, it's a defensive zone faceoff. Ovechkin's probably not your best player to put in a defensive situation. Like, I don't think you put him on there in the chance that he can score a goal and end the game for you, right? Like, I think their more pressing concern is to stop the other team from scoring, which Ovechkin's not really a known commodity for.
I mean, if you look at it, he doesn't, like, he's fast, which is kind of what you need anyways.
Yeah, I guess, but then at the same time, like, does he have the defensive awareness to, like, I don't know. I mean, he's not like a goal chaser either. I just find it's interesting. I wonder if it's more because Washington, the Caps, have never really had anyone that they could put in those situations, or maybe, you know, like, it's just like he's your best player. He's going to find a way to do something correct on the ice, whether he just makes the right pass or he takes the best shot. Like, maybe that's why. But yeah, so Ovechkin has now passed Gretzky. He's kind of on a heater action right now. He started the season off slow, we were talking about. We're like, is he ever going to pass Gretzky? Like, what type of pace he's going to need to take? But, like, right now he's, what, scored in 5 straight games? Like, he's starting to look like Ovechkin of old.
Okay, but let me put this. I'm going to have a question for Anson. So, Alex Ovechkin has 834 career regular season goals, all right?
Okay.
How many empty net goals do you think his career high is in a year? That's Jefferson too. Career high.
It's got to be like goals. 5 or 6 because of this year alone.
I go with 5. Probably sounds about right.
In 2021, 2022, he had 9 empty net goals. He hit 6 twice and 5 twice. It's not like he's like getting a significant amount of goals from empty net goals.
Yeah, but I mean, think about it. 9's a significant goal tally. That's almost double digits. Like, I'd probably say half the NHL doesn't even hit double digit goals in, like, by the end of the season. So having a guy who scored 9 goals into empty nets is quite substantial, I would say.
But then he goes in like ebbs and flows. So between 2011 and 2017, he had a total of 7 goals. In 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 years, it's 7 goals. So it's not like he
empty
like
empty netters, right?
Not, yeah, empty like netters, goals, goals, okay. Purely empty net goals. So it's not like it comes like there are years that, you know, he does score a lot of empty goals, but there's years he just doesn't. Like, it's not that much. Like, if you think about it, he's 2nd in goals all time to have the most amount of empty net goals. It's not like too crazy, is it?
Well, I think you actually bring up an interesting point, right? Like you said, the 7 seasons that you mentioned there was what, 2011 to like it was the early 2010s, mid 2010s. But now he's started to go on the heater with more empty net goals. Does that mean the Caps are trying to? It feels like almost like the Caps are just putting him on the ice, hoping that he scores a goal so that he can beat Gretzky's record. Is my conspiracy theorist on this, right? Like,
I don't think that is conspiracy theory. I believe Ted Leosa said they're not rebuilding until Ovi retires. Like, they're not going to bother trying. Like, they're all in on this as well. Like, if you look at it on a very, if you don't look at it, look at a pure money standpoint, right? Don't look at this as like a hockey record, whatever standpoint. Look at it as like a pure money. It's great business for you to be going all in repeatedly for this, right? Like, you're going to be able to help him, A, but B, the amount of merchandise, the amount of ticket sales you're going to get from this, like, it's just smart money at that point to do this.
Because the closer you get, you're like, oh, he's 10 away. He's 5. Like, once you get to, like, I don't know, 3, like, let's just say he gets to three away from the record, it would be like a sellout almost every
game. Every game's selling out. Yeah, you'd be like, oh, this might be the game, especially if you're looking at, like, stuff like, I don't know, they're putting him on for empty net or they're putting him on for empty net. It's like, you're going to see people be like, yeah, I'm going to go just to see Ovi play.
But not even that, just to see him break the, like, you know,
potentially yeah, you want break to, the record. You, yeah. That's one of the things where you, like, you want to be there, right? It's one of those things where if you have grandkids, you know, you'd be like, oh, yeah, I watched the greatest goal scorer of all time beat the record in person.
And, like, I don't know who is on pace. Like, let's just say Ovi doesn't make it. But, like, I think it's Matthews who's, like, on pace to quote-unquote break it. But he has to have, like, a 10 more seasons of, like, at least 30 goals or something. Like, something insane.
Well, I mean, like, if we're switching over to Matthews, right? Like, I think he's shown that 30 goals is no problem for him. I think it's just, I mean, like, he's shown already early in his career that he can be a consistent goal scorer. It's just, I think he needs, like, a couple of, like, big seasons where he hits, like, maybe it could be, like, this season where he hits, like, 60, 70 goals. He needs a couple of those big seasons. So then that way, like, he can have, like, just be safe and just do, like, 30, 40 goal seasons. And, I mean, it's kind of funny that we're saying his safe years are, like, or his, like, down years are going to be 30, 40 goal seasons. But I wouldn't be surprised if Matthews is gets quite close to whenever Ovechkin breaks the record, whatever Ovechkin finishes off with.
Do you know who the second leading career goal scorer is that's an active player right now?
Should it not be, like, Sidney Crosby or something?
Anton?
It's going to be someone niche, and I don't even have a name that comes up.
So Ovechkin has 834, right?
Give me a number.
It is Sidney Crosby, but okay. Guess the number of goals Crosby has, and he's second.
400?
I probably think he's closer to the 600 level. I don't think he's that far behind. But I know he's far behind, but I don't think he's, like, that far behind.
So Ovi has 834. Crosby has 578. Like, to put it in perspective, you're not going to see another player challenge for this for maybe, what, 30 years, 20 years? If you're looking at, if you are in the belief that Matthews is going to be that guy, 15 years, like, it's such a generational thing we're tracking here.
I think the person who's going to rack up some air miles is going to be Wayne Gretzky towards the end, when he has to show up at every Ovechkin's game that he might break the record, and he just has to be on hand so that the camera can pan to him, so, like, clapping and celebrating that Ovechkin beat his record. I think he's going to be racking up those air miles. But I don't know. I feel like Matthews is probably going to be close. I mean, right now, in terms of, like, you're looking at goals per game, Matthews is fifth all time. Ovechkin's eighth. So, like, if Matthews can continue his pace, he has a chance. And again, it's all about longevity. It's also about playing for good teams. And it's, you know, luck as well, right? Like, can he make sure that there's no lockouts or anything like that? Like, can we make sure that, you know, I don't know. I think Matthews has a decent shot, but, you know, like you said, also, like, we're not going to really be chasing this for at least another, 10 years when Matthews might be kind of close. And, I mean, 10 years, maybe his career trails off. So we're not even considering that anymore.
But that's, like, if we're lucky. And then on top of that, it's like, he was the first person I thought of who could, like, okay, he might have a chance. And like we said, we're talking about 15 years away. Ovi, I think he got screwed by the lockout in 2012. Whereas, like, he would be, how far is he from the record right now? Sorry, like 30? 40? I don't remember.
60?
Like, he would be, I don't know, I would say, like, 30 to 40, if not for the lockout. Which, you know, it's still far away, but, like, given how this season went, I think would help him a lot. And, like, he doesn't have Backstrom. Kuznetsov is taking a leave of absence. It's, like, he doesn't have his de facto setup men anymore. He's got to drive his own lines. And at, I think, 39, 40-ish? Like, I don't think he's a line driver. Like you said, like, we know what the Caps are doing. And it's literally like, hey, we're feeding Ovi the puck, whether he's at the circle, whether he's what's it called, playing the last minute and a half. Like, you know, we want him to score. But without, you know, on 5-on-5, without his two guys, I think it makes it a lot harder.
I'm very sad that you disrespected all-star Washington Capitals Tom Wilson in saying that Alex Ovechkin has to carry. He has no one to help him out. You know, there's an all-star on that team.
Yes.
Okay, because you're not allowed putting disrespect and all-star without putting Kucherov on there. That's a disrespect to everyone else as well. That is the true disrespect. Not Anson disrespecting Tom Wilson. That Kucherov is disrespect.
Yeah, I don't think I disrespected all-star Tom there. It's okay. Kucherov was straight up mailing in.
What I do respect, though, is that he just, like, embraced, like, being the villain. Like, he was just like, oh, yeah, you know what? I mailed it in. Y'all want to boo me? All right, cool. Let's boo me harder.
Like, I don't know. Like, with, I mean, the All-Star game, I mean, I guess we'll kind of talk about our thoughts about the All-Star game. But, like, when you're invited, I feel like you should make some attempt. But, like, he made himself kind of like the villain of the weekend. But, I don't know. It was just, especially when you're the first overall pick in the All-Star draft, having that type of showing is kind of like crappy looking.
I mean, yeah, but at the same time, like, I do appreciate that after he messed up, like, I think he was aware he messed up. So he just, like, played into it. Like, I respect that part where it's just like, look, I probably did what I shouldn't have, so let me just make it more entertaining for the fans in that sense, you know what I mean?
It would probably also be worse if he, you know, tried harder and he, you know, sucked more. You're like, oh, shit. What do I do now? Like, do I just try even harder? But then, like, you're putting more pressure on yourself at All-Star, you know, at the All-Star game. It's like, you know, I get it that he's like, you know what? I'm already, like, not winning. I might as well just, you know, like you said, like, I was just embrace the role of being a villain. And it is what it is at that point.
Yeah. I mean, like, it was only one talking point, I think, from the All-Star weekend. I think It was good, I think. I don't know. I think the skill competition was pretty good. I think what McDavid won, of course, is kind of like who's going to beat McDavid in a skills competition. I don't know. Did you guys watch? I kind of watched the draft in, like, after the draft. Like, I kind of watched the replay. I'm not sure I was a big fan of, like, how they did the All-Star draft. It just kind of seemed kind of boring. It wasn't really, like, exciting, I would say. I don't know your thoughts, if you guys watched the All-Star draft, or even, like, your thoughts on that.
Hey, who's the most personable NHL player that you know?
Do we say Brad Marchand?
It used to be PK Subban, right? That's his thing. But I think one thing you just see, like, one problem you just constantly see with All-Star games is, like, it's very hard to get the players interested. Like, if you look at the NBA, NFL, NHL, like, you look at, you know, MLS for some reason, like, they don't really care. The only league that kind of does it well would be MLB, right? Where they go, like, winner gets home field advantage in the World Series. And yeah, yes. That way people care.
There's also, you can't mail it in. 60 miles an hour.
And it's just a problem that you just have. It's just probably across all sports except for MLB, because they're like, I will make the stakes so high then.
Yeah, I mean, I think in, like, the All-Star game itself wasn't awful. I think it was nice to see all the different players. But I would say that I think the player involvement is going to come more from the younger players. Like watching the All-Star draft, it was kind of clear that, like, Jack Hughes and Quinn Hughes actually kind of took it a little bit serious. I don't know if Bublé kind of helped with that, because, like, they actually talked before each pick, while everyone else was kind of like just picking whatever. They kind of already knew who they were going to pick and were just kind of going with the flow. But, like, you can actually see, like, them actually trying. So I wonder if maybe we'll see it involve, like the All-Star game evolve, where there is going to be more excitement, where, you know, players actually want to interact with the, like, fans, or, like, just really get more into it. I think it'll be interesting to see
how much of it is it's because it's their first time. They put it this way, Jeffrey: if you were going to a restaurant that you're really excited for, right, that first time you'd be super excited to do it, right? But then by the seventh or eighth time you go to that restaurant, you're gonna be like, oh, this is fun, but like, I don't really love it anymore.
I know what I'm getting, like, with the second you walk in.
Yeah. Right? Like, how much of it is that where it's always going to be those younger players because it's still new, it's still novel to them, but for players who've been there for the seventh time, whatever, they're just like, alright, cool, this is like, be cool, I've been here before, you gotta play cool, you know what I mean?
Dude, Crosby didn't even show up for the draft.
Well, I mean, that's different, right? Like, he's Sidney Crosby, but B, like, I don't know if you need to be at the All-Star draft, right? Like, I agree with you. Like, I guess being new to the entire experience obviously makes you more excited. So, like, I wonder if you're at the All-Star game, I think you're looking to bring in, like, younger players to the All. Like, I mean, in general, your best players are players that are younger or in their prime. So you can, maybe they're going to be, like, newer, quote-unquote, All-Stars, but when you're bringing in Sidney Crosby for the 10th, 11th, 12th time, maybe it kind of dulls. So maybe like if you're picking All-Star rosters, like, or players who play in the All-Star, you kind of want to make sure that you kind of get some players who are more exciting. Like, I wonder if that's why they kind of picked Tom Wilson over like an Alex Ovechkin, who has had a history of not going, like, skipping the All-Star game time, kind of, right? Like, I think it'll be interesting to see what kind of happens with the All-Star game, how it evolves. The problem, though, is that we might not see too much of a, like, continued, like, building on it, because there's going to be things now, like the Olympics. I guess we're having this tournament coming up next year or something, where it's going to be, like, a four in-season tournament between, like, four national teams. Like, I think that's going to maybe stall some of the improvements we've seen with this All-Star game. But it would be nice to see, like, I guess it's a little bit of variety every year. It's not just going to be the same old All-Star game.
What's more disrespectful? Having Team Europe in the World Cup of Hockey? Or would you rather have Team not existent because we're only new four teams?
Well, I think with the whole, I mean, you have to be able to build a team of just NHL players, right? So I think I don't know how many countries are represented in the NHL, but how many teams can ice a full hockey team? Like, I mean, sorry, how many countries can ice a full hockey team of NHL players is my question. Also, probably recognizing you can't have, like, a full-on huge tournament because you still got the regular season. You can't, like, take away, like, 2 weeks of the, well, I mean, I guess you can't with the Olympics, but, like, if your NHL is just doing its own thing, it probably doesn't want to cause too much of an interruption in the season, so it's just going to play a quick little tourney. And, you know, four teams is basically enough. And, I mean, what, Canada, U.S., I think it's Sweden and Finland are the other two teams. Correct me if I'm wrong, but that kind of makes up most of the NHL.
But, like, they're still, like, really good non-those four nations players, right? Like,
individuals.
Yeah. So, like, would it have been better? But then I guess you would then run into the problem. It's just like, okay, now the five teams, if you have a rest of Europe, what do you do for a sixth team, right? Before it gets, like, weird scheduling. I get it. But, like, it's just, I don't know. It just rubs me the wrong way. I don't know. I don't know what's worse.
Like, do you do, like, rest of Europe and, like, rest of the world on top of that?
I think one question I think the NHL is trying to avoid here is, do you put a Russian team in there or not?
Well, clearly they didn't.
Like, yeah.
I can say that.
Like, okay, if you take all the politics aside, right? We're looking at this in a vacuum, right? You would probably put a Russian team on there, right?
Odds are yes.
Yeah. So then you get five. So then you need a sixth team to kind of even everything out. So you'd kind of put maybe put a rest of Europe in there, right?
That, and it's like, I think, like, back to, like, you know, our first part where it's like, hey, let's just say, like, because, you know, you don't have Team Russia this year, and I don't know, let's assume they do this every 3-4 years. They keep this kind of like a Olympic style thing. It's like, it's not every year, but, like, you know, it's enough to keep people kind of, quote unquote, entertained. Top of the, like, the first name I think of if you do Team Russia is Ovi, and I don't think he'll be back for the next one if they include Team Russia.
Well, okay, hold up first. This is just a one-time thing. This is like a stopgap until the Winter Olympics, right? This is right, Jeffrey?
But if it goes well,
I think they're just gonna go straight into the Olympics, right? They're not gonna
keep. Well, I think they want to do like a World Cup of hockey again. So I assume like that's gonna be a big tournament. But I think this is like a stopgap in the sense like, hey, we can organize this quite quickly in mid-season and get it done. Like it won't be like something that's going to cause too many logistical problems. It'd be like a quick one-off.
That's fair.
My suggestion, maybe you do, I mean, do you do like a Team North America, a Team Scandinavia, and then a Team Rest of the World, and then do like a three-team tournament? Like, I mean, or I don't know if you want to come up with a fourth team somehow, but like, I feel like that way, I don't know if you want to alienate certain countries is my question, right? Like, do you, I get from like a certain standpoint, you want like the top countries, but I agree, like you want the best players, right? In the end though, like if you try to include every country, it ends up just being an all-star game, right? Like you might as well just have a regular all-star game. You don't have to have the division by country or region, right? So it'll be interesting, but I mean that's not probably the biggest news that came from the All-Star Weekend in terms of like what type of special events are coming out. Like I think the biggest thing is that, you know, the NHL is going back to the Olympics and that is gonna cut into the 2026 season. Right? No, 2026 Olympics, I believe, is the next Winter Olympics, and the NHL will be going there. So that's gonna be exciting. I think I don't know about you guys, but I really miss not seeing NHL players at the Olympics. I love the fact that a lot of people that probably would have never made the Olympics got to play in the Olympics, but it was not best on best hockey. And I'm ready to watch best on best hockey in the Olympics again.
We can see a line of McDavid, Crosby, and Bedard.
Yeah. Do you know how much hashtag content we can make out of having the Olympics back?
It's Crosby and his kids.
Yeah, so much content.
Or it's like Crosby, Marchand, and McDavid. It's like the combinations. It's like, yeah, you know, we see them on the NHL. It's like they play against one another. But now you're like, you're looking at, what, 2 years down the road? Like, a couple guys probably won't be in that lineup. But then you also have a couple guys who are like, okay, if they take the next leap, they're in. Maybe they're a fourth liner, quote unquote. On Team Canada would be like, I don't know, first liner and on half the other teams. So I think for Team Canada and Team USA, it's like stupendously stacked. And I don't know if I'm jumping too far ahead, but I think I like USA a bit more in terms of overall build of the team.
So much hashtag content we can make. That's all I'm saying. Like, I already, like, Anson's usually the quietest one on this podcast, and he's already thinking about the content.
Of 2 years.
There you go, see?
2 years.
Are we going to start building way too early predictions of the Canadian Olympic team for 2026 then?
Of freaking course. You already know it. It's going to be like, oh, as this is a dynamic list as you change. As we get new players.
Well, I mean, we're not prepared to do that this episode, but I guess the one question you guys kind of maybe brought up is, does Bedard make the 2026 Olympic team? I don't think so.
See what I mean? Look how exciting we are. We're never excited about this type of stuff, but look, that hashtag content that comes up. But answer your question, yes. Yes, he does.
I'd be shocked if he doesn't.
I would be, like, I don't know. I have a feeling that Bedard might not make it simply for the fact that he might not be a top. Because if I feel like Bedard would be brought in as an experienced guy, like someone that plays as like the 13th floor and then maybe gets into games here and there, like, is that like 14th forward? But knowing Team Canada, if they're bringing a 13th forward, they're bringing a guy that will actually, like, is more of a bottom. A third, fourth pairing type of third, fourth line type of guy. So I don't know if Bedard's a top six forward for Team Canada. So We'll wait and see. I mean, like you said, I don't think it's going to be next episode, but now we can start, you know, talking about NHL going to the Olympics, lots of exciting stuff from the All-Star Weekend. And, you know, I think all in all, I'd probably give the NHL a solid B+ on the All-Star Weekend. Would you guys kind of agree with that grade or any changes in your grades?
I think B+ or B. I think they were really able to get a good list of celebrities involved this year, right? Like, it wasn't just people who were maybe past the prime or people who can't draw an audience. The celebrities they brought this time were able to draw an audience on their own. Shout out to Michael Bublé telling everyone that he was high on shrooms. That was great. That drew more eyes. You know, all publicity is good publicity. So, I mean, I think all in all, it was much better than I thought it'd be. The one gripe I had was, holy shit, tickets were expensive.
Yeah, I was meaning to ask, did you guys end up going to, like, the fan fest before that, or do you guys
But, like, even the, what's it called, the skills competition, tickets were, like, $180, $200 Canadian, so, like, what, $150 American? Like, that, for, and this is, like, for, like, obstructed view seats, right? It's not, like, for anything else.
Oh, with, like, a little pillar in the way. You're in the corner.
Yep.
Whereas you can watch at home and be comfy.
It's a different atmosphere, though, to be fair.
No, absolutely. But, like, I think with the obstructive view from, like, bird's eye view, I think is $200. You could do a lot more of that, I think.
But that comes back to what we were talking about, right? Like, imagine spending $200 to have Kucherov, like, half-ass it like that. Like, I'd be pissed, too.
Imagine spending however much money you had to do, spend to watch Messi not play against Hong Kong.
Okay, that's a different story that I don't want to. That's a different can of worms. I could go for another 45 minutes on. I don't think either of my co-hosts want that though. All
right. Well, why don't we move on to, I guess, an early start on the trade deadline. There were a couple of trades that we kind of missed between our last episode. One kind of happened like right before the All-Star break. So that kind of meant that Calgary didn't have a single representative at the All-Star game. Kind of like when John Scott got traded midway through the All-Star weekend and ended up kind of in a weird situation. Elias Lindholm going to the Vancouver Canucks. The path between Vancouver and Calgary remains stable. They continue to just trade with each other. They play against each other. And the player movement just continues to go between those two cities. What are you guys' initial thoughts on the Elias Lindholm trade?
Has Kuzmenko been that bad this year?
He's in the doghouse. Or so he was in the doghouse of Rick Tocchet.
I think that was my two questions. I was like, is Kuzmenko that bad this year? And are the Canucks, is this the Canucks' all-in year? Is my two questions.
I can answer that with a very, I feel like it's a yes and yes, I think. Because Patterson's an RFA this year. And he's an RFA, but he's still going to get the Brinks truck. So I think you got to make do with what you have in terms of your cap and maximize it while you can. And Rutherford, like, how far are we from the trade deadline? Like I think he's still got a move or two left, realistically. Might not be like Lindholm-esque, but I think if, you know, like, the Canucks are firing on all cylinders. It's like Demko's solid. Their top guys are playing like top guys. They're bringing in Lindholm, who scored two goals in his first game or something. It's like, I think the way that it's going, he's like, okay, now that, you know, if Lindholm is clicking with the guys, cool. Let's bring some more help. I think he's doing it in a way that it's like different than other GMs, where it's like, okay, trade deadline is about 4 p.m., 3 p.m. I'm going to do it at the 59, and then I'll bring the guy in. He's just like, nah, deadline, never heard of it. I'll just do what I want, and I like that more.
Did Rutherford draft Lindholm when were they ever both in? I have a feeling they're both in Carolina at the same time. Like, they must have crossed paths at some point. So I wonder, like, if he knew the player ahead of time. I think that helps with making a trade earlier, like, knowing that. And I mean, like, if you're the Canucks, you know you're buying at the deadline. How aggressive you are, I think that gets determined closer. But I kind of agree with you there, Anton. Like, I think, you know, like, it's a smart move to, you know, not wait until the very end, right? Like, if Lindholm doesn't match right away, that means you might waste a couple of games, and those couple of games could be very important closer to the end of the season. Whereas now you have time to kind of jiggle around the lines a little bit, find what works, and you know, be ready for the playoffs, because this isn't a team that's like worried about not making the playoffs. This is a team that's going to be like, okay, we're going to be in the playoffs. What is our lineup going to be? And like you said, like the Canucks still have about just over $1 million left in cap space for the deadline. That could change, of course, as the weeks go by before the deadline. But yeah, like it's a smart move to, you know, make this move early when, you know, you're kind of setting the market on what centers are going to cost at the deadline.
Yes, Rutherford and Lindholm cross paths. He drafted him the year before Rutherford drafted Lindholm the year before he stepped down.
So there you go. There's like familiarity, and I don't know if there's a, I wonder if there's a, like a Swedish connection between Pedersen and Lindholm. But like if we look at the trade and like what it cost Vancouver to trade, right? It cost him Kuzmenko, which I guess we'll talk about that, because I think also not that question, like was Kuzmenko that bad? Who's kind of there more for salary purposes. You got a couple picks, of course, the 2024 first and then a conditional 2024 fourth. And you've got two prospects in Yoni Yermo and Hunter. I don't want to try to butcher this name, but Hunter. Any of my co-hosts want to interject and try to help me out with this name?
Nope.
Okay, I'm going to be left on my own. Hunter Brustewicz, who's, you know, probably the main prospect going back. Like, this wasn't a return, though, that was like, oh, we're looking to extend Lindholm. This is more of a, you know, we're just going to bring him just for the playoffs. Or, I will ponder this, is he the backup if they can't sign Pedersen?
I think they re-sign Pedersen, right? Like, he's an RFA.
I think Pedersen's ceiling is higher than Lindholm's.
Yeah.
It'd be, like, unless Pedersen straight up just says, yeah, no, I don't want to be a Canuck, I think he's staying there. Like, there's no indication of, like, anyone anywhere saying that he's unhappy. I think that they're obviously just a little apart in terms of the salary. It is what it is. It's like he's like, I want to be paid. Like he just saw Matthews get 13. He just saw Nylander get 11, 10 and a half. Like he's like, yeah,
I don't imagine. Okay, that's he gets. I don't imagine any team is going to offer 4 first round picks for him, right? And that's if he earns more than 10.7 on an offer sheet. And I think if they go between 8.5 to 10.7, which is 2 first round picks, a second and a third, you match that right away. So yeah, I don't think an offer sheet is much of a, if they offer him between 8.5 and 10.7, if you're Rutherford, you go, thanks for negotiating on my behalf.
It's what the Habs did with, Sebastian Aho. He's like, thanks.
Oh, yeah. Thanks for negotiating on my behalf. Yeah, done. Match. Next person. Say maybe no four more. 4 first round picks. I think at the point you're just like, all right, thanks.
Yeah, because we've had this conversation on numerous occasions where if you have your first round picks and you have a cap space, odds are you aren't doing so well.
You know what? Actually, because it is 4 first round picks. You actually have some interesting teams on there. Boston has 4 first round picks. The Avs do. The Oilers do.
Do they have $10 million in cap space?
Next year, by next year, yeah. It might screw up your cap space like tremendously, but they do. Most teams actually do because they have a lot of like RFAs or whatever, right? So like next year, if we look at the Avalanche as an example, right? Next year they have, oh, you know what? They don't. They have 3.475. They're going to be in trouble if they do that. But yeah, I guess you're right. So there's not that many teams that actually can do it. So yeah, you're right in the sense. But at the same time, I think Patterson's a player you consider destroying your cap structure for.
And like, I'm not saying like you offer sheet. Like, I think you trade Patterson because I think by trading Patterson, you open flexibility. You open up the market because teams can send back salary back to you so that, you know, they don't have to worry about eating the entire, like their salary cap is going to be completely short by bringing in this one player and not having any outgoing salary, right? So, I mean, it's just a weird, another conspiracy possibility, because it doesn't really make sense, because Lindholm is a UFA. So the assumption is, I don't think the Canucks are going to be like, July 1st, we need an answer. And if Pettersson doesn't give an answer by July 1st, they're going to sign Lindholm instead and then try to trade Pettersson, right? Like, in the end, I think that was just trying to see, ruffle some feathers here. There was another trade for a center another Canadian trade. I guess the Canadian teams actually know that's trade deadline, and the American teams maybe forgot that, or are just waiting until March 8th. The Jets acquired Sean Monahan from the Habs for 2024 first, and a conditional, I believe it was a third. I think the biggest news, or the biggest detail that everyone likes to point out, is that the Habs got two first-round picks for Sean Monahan.
It's a tidy business for, I'll be honest, I don't remember who your GM is, but as for the Habs, it's a really tidy business if you do everything together. It's like you got an injury-prone player who is, I would argue, at his rock bottom, just really needed a change in scenery. And I think last year he was doing pretty well up to like the trade deadline, and it was like, I don't know, a week or two, and he just got injured. And I was like, oh, now you can't trade him, and he's done for the season. You're like, wow. So the Habs did, you gave him a 1 or 2 year deal. It wasn't that, it was a short term deal, regardless. And it was like, hey, you know, we'll work with you. We'll find your place. One, you want to rebuild your value and play for a contender. And two, we want assets. So I think overall, this is a win-win.
So the whole thing was the Habs brought in Lindholm from the Flames, along with the Flames first.
Monahan.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, Monahan. So that, you know, he was doing okay, started the season well, but yeah, like you said, December gets injured out for the season. But, you know, like you said, right, Monahan realizes, you know, he needs to rebuild his value so that he can sign a contract come UFA season. Signs back with the Habs on a nice, you know, 1 year under $2 million deal. And, you know, he's put up 35 points in 49 games. Like, that's pretty good. And the fact that he's making under $2 million, he has his deficits, but he's still a good player. And honestly, I feel like the Jets probably paid less than what I expected. I guess my hand's got the injury risk, but, you know, a first is not a lot of, like, not a lot for a guy who's, like, a probably a top six or middle six center who's making $2 million, who has got offensive capabilities, can win you face-offs. Like, I think, again, also nice tidy business from Kevin Cheveldayoff.
Like, this is just a clean, like, rental, right? Like, he's gonna have trouble fitting him into the salary structure next year. So it's just a pure rental. And at the same time, if you're Montreal, right, this is how you rebuild, right? You pick guys off the scrap heap who have not done well, and then you go, all right, cool, play cheap, we'll trade you, it'll be awesome. And I think that's exactly what they've done. It's a masterclass. Don't get me wrong, but it's what you expect. And I think at the end of the day, like, this is the type of deal you need to be making. And there is a premium that you're paying because he's making $2 million, right? Monahan's making $7 million or whatever that contract was before. You're not trading him for a first. His contract is an asset now. It's not a liability anymore. So I think I'm happy with it. I don't know if fans are after, since the Jets have struggled the last couple of games. But I think it's a good pickup, and I don't know. I think it's a win-win, like you guys have said. And if I'm a Jets fan, I'm happy, despite what I just said. I'm happy in the sense that you got something for player for cheap who's been really good. If you're a Habs fan, you're happy. You got a first-round pick for someone you just took a lottery ticket on.
Like you said, I think if it wasn't for the price, I think it'd be like a second-rounder. Like, if it was like a, I don't know, $5 million player, I think it'd be like, okay, we retain some. But either you give us the first, but if you don't, you know, it becomes a burden, like an anchor. But because he's making so little, great, it's like you say, it's an asset. But I guess the next name on the block, it would be like Adam Henrique. But because he's making $5 million, do you think he'll go for the same price, or it would be like more or less?
Well, I mean, I think it's gonna be dependent on how much the Ducks retain on him, right? Like, I think, like you said, like the contract, I mean, teams closer to the deadline could fit a guy who's making north of $5 million, but you open up the market to so many other teams by retaining on him. So I think it'll be interesting to see whether Pat Verbeek retains on him. I think he is a guy that will retain on probably his best asset at the deadline. I don't know. Some people are saying Nick Dowd apparently is the next top center coming out, and I think there's a big difference. But it kind of does show, like, in the current NHL, given how the cap has been frozen for so many years, that players on more valuable contracts, even if they're not greater players, are going to cost more. So it'll be interesting to see what happens at the trade deadline, I guess. We'll see, you know, what type of players get moved. It's kind of nice to see some trades starting to trickle in. And, you know, it's a little tease because there's a good chance now we're not going to get a trade until the trade deadline. But hopefully, you know, some other NHL GMs are going to be like Jim Rutherford and realize, hey, you know, let's make some moves now. And then see how everything works. And if we can make more moves, we'll, you know, do some more later on closer to the deadline. But yeah, it's pretty much our episode for the week for this week. And my co-hosts have any final thoughts for this episode?
One thing, Jeffrey, I forgot the prospect the Calgary Flames traded for Last Lindholm. Can you say his name again?
I don't think the Calgary Flames traded any prospects.
Sorry, the Vancouver Canucks traded for Elias Lindholm.
That was not your question. So
yeah, Hunter, what was it, Jeffrey?
That was not the question. I'm sorry, I can't answer that question because it was not the correct. It's just not the correct question. Sorry, I can't answer it.
That's a final thought.
That was a shit stirring thought.
Hanson, any other thoughts?
No, I'm just going through cap friendly. I know there's a premium feature to see every team's outlook. I don't know. That's just. I didn't realize Cap Friendly had more features like on top of what they just had. But yeah, I noticed Mr. Landeskog still in the IR, so I hope to see him play again soon, to be honest with you.
Can we all chip in and get Cap Friendly premium for the pod?
Well, you honest at this point, we should.
Honestly, maybe we have to. I mean, Cap Friendly has always been a good friend of us, of ours, in terms of when we need information, but we'll see if we need the premium. Yeah, that's pretty much our episode. Hopefully there's some more trades to talk about. Maybe we'll start working on our way, way, way too early Olympic teams for 2026. Or maybe we'll start making our projections for the teams that will be playing in that little tournament next season. So yeah, that's our episode. And we'll talk to you guys in the next 2 weeks.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to the Bag of Pucks podcast, part of the National Podcast Network. You want to complain about us? You can tweet us at BOP_POD on Twitter. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you soon.